Because a lot of people tend to go through a midlife crisis. That is when you've created a life based on your identity, your soul trying to wake you up from the reruns of the ego.
Ming Li Chung, a mindful leader, business strategist, and passionate advocate for purpose-driven living.
As a trauma-informed coach, you understand what the impact of an emotional, impactful experience can have on your body and on your behavior. So I'm trained to be able to recognize that in the behavior of others.
Ming Li is founder of Key Connect Solutions.
Coaching leaders is one of them, and helping people to uncover that which is in their subconscious blueprint so that they can show up as the best versions of themselves. Whatever you put behind I am will become of you. I created my reality. I bring the healing in the business world.
People, welcome to the Sunside Kingdom Show.
Welcome, Ming Li.
Well, thank you. What an intro. You need to send that to me.
I will. I can't take credits for the intro. We have backstage writers that handle those.
Well, they're fantastic.
So kudos to backstage. So just before we got started, you said, "Oh, you're going to ask me the most difficult question." So here
most
it comes.
Difficult question.
We're just going to get right out of the gate. So, who is Ming Li in 2025?
Who am I in 2025? I think if you would have asked me that question a couple of years ago, the first thing that would have come out of my mouth was probably, hey, I'm a director of sales, or, you know, whatever title position that you have.
Yeah.
But in 2025, the very first thing that I am, because why is it such a difficult question? How do you explain essence? It's a little bit difficult, right?
Yeah.
So the closest that I can get to it for me is, first and foremost, I'm an energetic human being. Now, labels that I do might have and relate to at the moment is I'm also a mom. I have an amazing 6-year-old now. I'm a wife. I'm a daughter. I'm a friend. I'm a business owner, entrepreneur, and I'm a trauma-informed leadership strategist and coach as well. So I would
that
say
that last one is a lot to unpack.
That's a lot to unpack. Yes. But those are the main labels, I guess, right now that people know me by.
Okay, awesome. So let's dive right into unpack that last bit, because I don't think the average person has heard about what a trauma-informed
leadership and business strategist. Yes.
Yeah.
Now let's start off with what it means to be trauma-informed, right? So I got training to understand what exactly an impactful emotional experience, because that is what trauma is. A lot of times when we think about trauma, you know, we think about the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
But a traumatic experience can also be you hit your toe when you were 3. For whatever reason, that moment gets so impacted by your body, and imagine your nervous system, which is your emotional database, it takes a snapshot. And then it puts it in that emotional database. And from that moment on, anything that has to do with maybe that cupboard might trigger you, right? That is trauma. That is also trauma. And so understanding, as a trauma-informed coach, you understand what the impact of an emotional, impactful experience can have on your body and on your behavior. So I'm trained to be able to recognize that in the behavior of others and in entire organizations, for that matter, because they're made up of energetic human beings, people. And then how do we grow from that, right? How do you not let that stop you from your potential and doing what you want to do?
Yeah.
And so I have put together a very unique leadership trajectory as one part of the service that we do with Key Connect, to help leaders with the human element of leadership, because leadership is not what you do. Leadership is really who you are. You come in as you before the to-do list and the tasks and the presentations and whatever it is that you're going to create, and whatever is in your subconscious blueprint you bring to work every single day. So as a trauma-informed leadership coach, I help people understand what are their subconscious blocks, what are these experiences that they went through in their past or that they're going to go through right now, how does that impact their current behavior and what do we need to do to be able to shift their habits so that they can show up as better versions of themselves, as true and inspirational and purposeful leaders.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So could you give me a couple examples of how you've put this to work with, well, let's say a quote-unquote testimonial or a use case of sorts?
Well, let me first start by telling you a little bit of how I became trauma-informed, because that's a very interesting dynamic. A lot of times people feel, especially when you're new in your business or as an entrepreneur, when things don't go your way, it might set people off the course that they're supposed to be on, right? When if you were to take a different perspective, you can actually learn and understand what's the lesson that you're supposed to get out of this. Now, for me, when I started Key Connect, very honestly, I didn't fully know what Key Connect was going to be. At that time,
it was... How long ago was that?
4 years officially. Yeah, 4 years officially. We just celebrated our fourth year. And I can't believe that we already, thank you, I can't believe that we already work with 40 and, plus companies, which
and,
is crazy.
And this is your first business?
This is my first, well, technically no.
Okay. So there's more to
technically,
unpack.
Technically no. I also had a bed and breakfast in the center of Amsterdam. But what happened when I started Key Connect is I went from one, you know, bigger client and a couple of small ones to suddenly having four corporate clients. And coincidentally, or maybe not, most of the owners of those companies were these gentlemen around Generation X baby boomers, multimillionaires. Very nice, but when we needed to shift certain things within the business to be able to release overwhelm on their teams, suddenly I don't work as much with them. They start to avoid me. And I could see that they had a particular fear, but I didn't know how to create the space to be able to help them through that block.
Yeah.
And so that led me to become a trauma-informed, you know, coach, because I wanted to understand.
Because what were you doing at that point before adding the trauma-informed?
Well, before, what I was doing is I was doing leadership coaching. But then I was also helping these organizations with structure development. Right? So I would come in and certain things were not going the way that the leaders or the owners wanted it to go. I would come in, I would identify, you know, what are the current blocks, doing a business analysis, and then we would start to, you know, shift certain things to be able to create better structure. Sometimes we needed to create structure, sometimes we needed to adapt the structure and improve it. And having that experience, and again, we're not supposed to always look at these things in this way, but the reality is I'm a woman and I'm tiny and I'm sitting there with a multimillionaire. I don't have that money yet at that time. And so how am I going to come and tell you? I can imagine that those things pop up through the minds of these gentlemen. What am I going to come and tell you about business? I've already made it here, right? And why do I have to go back into my past, for example, and overcome this? So an example of that at that time was we needed to shift the pricing of all of the services within the organization, moving from a quantity-based to a quality-based business module.
That's a major shift.
I don't even know if the owner today managed to, maybe, they got some coaching afterwards, but I don't know if they managed to actually get over that hurdle because in the past they experienced financial scarcity. Right? And so going through these things, that's how I ended up becoming trauma-informed, because I really wanted to understand, not just for the gentleman, but I wanted to understand, how can I create a safe space for these, in that time, these gentlemen to feel safe enough to maybe go back in the past if they needed to go back, and how can I help them to get over this hurdle so we can do the things that we need to do business-wise and move forward for them to be able to get the freedom that they wanted at that time, and also for their teams to work in a energetic and engaging, purposeful working environment. So we do what we got to do, but we actually want to be here. So that led me to become trauma-informed. And from my experience as well, because I used to be a director of sales of multi-million dollar properties, and I've needed to become very good at recognizing the needs, the emotional needs mm-hmm. of either the company, the teams, the people. And I do an exercise every quarter. That is a very simple exercise that anybody can do. I look at energizers and drainers. And so every 3 months, I look at, what am I doing? What is my team doing? At that time, it was just me. What am I doing? What gives me energy? Mm. And what absolutely drains me? Yeah. And I try to remove the drainers as much as possible mm-hmm. and try to align as much with my energizers. So that's one thing that I do. And another thing is as well, I follow Nine Star Key, which is, for me, the study of energetic patterns.
Okay.
And I try to align as much with my energy as I can, right? My natural tendency, my natural energy gifts.
Yep.
So those are two things that I tend to do that have helped me along the way to be able to create services for Key Connect that are very energetically aligned to me. And coaching leaders is one of them.
Yep.
And helping people to uncover that which is in their subconscious blueprint so that they can show up as the best versions of themselves. And I match those two things together, which up until now, I haven't seen that's being done. So for me, it's very revolutionary because I bring the healing in the business world.
Yeah.
And usually that's seen, you know.
There's a lot of emotional intelligence that you're bringing to a heavily IQ, the EQ to the IQ space.
Exactly. But you know what's so funny is that for me, we go even beyond emotional intelligence, the way that we know it at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're talking about emotional well-being. Mm. We're talking about wellness on a completely different level because I'm putting in trauma-informed techniques, somatic healing techniques, psychology, neuroscience, high-level leadership, you know, skills, business strategy, and put it all together.
These are things that you have to do physically with the clients or
depends on what you mean with physically, but I can do it in person mm-hmm. or we can easily do it online.
Okay.
Right. So if I need to do an emotional healing, for example, I recognize that the person has a particular block. For example, they can't voice. They're in their position for like 20 years already. Mm. They have a pretty high, you know, typical director position. But for whatever reason, they feel like they can't voice the way that they want to voice. So what happens, they go into a state of avoidance when they need to have a confrontation or a difficult conversation up until the point where everything has been so stretched out and it explodes, right? Or it goes in a way they technically they didn't want to.
Yep.
But what happened is maybe when they were three, they were this wild child and somebody told them it's not okay to be who you are. Mm. It's not okay to voice. Be quiet. Or when they voice their opinion, they got some type of slack from it, right? In that moment, that's an emotional impactful experience.
Stored
in the emotional database, which is the nervous system.
Yep.
From that moment on, it's not okay for you to voice anymore. So we go back and we start to change that blueprint. We distort the memory a little bit through emotional healing. We distort the memory into something positive. And from that moment on, that weight that they've been carrying for maybe 3 or 4 decades gets released.
Wow.
And suddenly they can voice much better. And if we were to summarize all of this, basically I help people to become leaders of their energy. Because in that moment, once you've recognized why you actually do that behavior, next time that you get triggered, that's when you can actually make a good choice.
Yep.
That's when you can recognize yourself while it's happening and choose, am I going to continue doing this or am I going to do something different? And every time that you choose to do something different, you're healing, you're growing, and you are becoming the version you were actually meant to be. And awesome. So in a way that kind of, you know, is part of the question that you also asked me.
Yeah.
Give me an example. And this is one of the many examples that we have of leaders that we've worked with. So that's one part of the business. Another thing that we also do at Key Connect Data with my team, I have incredible key specialists, as I call them. And we help organizations, we help leaders to be able to shift the organizational culture, right?
So, one moment. So what does key stand for?
Key, very good question.
Yeah.
key is actually energy life force. So a lot of people know the Chinese definition of it, which is qi.
Yeah.
In Japanese, it's ki.
Ah,
And coming from the study of nine star ki, which is the study of energetic patterns, then what we do is we help you connect to your life force, to your energy.
So it's also spelled the same, K-I, nine-star key?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so funny because when I needed to, you know, come up with a name for the organization, in the beginning, I didn't like Key Connect. I was thinking Key Force or something like that, you know, something that's energy in that way. And at that time, that one big client that I had, they had this, I think it was Skype chat.
Okay.
And the owner told me like, hey, because they were a marketing agency, hey, well, how about you, plug it in and let people vote and see what happens. Everybody voted for Key Connect. And I'm like, okay. And then my mom is actually the one that came up with Key Connect.
Oh.
And so I decided to trust and be like, okay, you know what? If everybody voted for it, and you know, my mom also knows me pretty well, so let's go for it. In the end, that's exactly what we do today.
Yeah,
we help you connect better to your energy, and we help leaders connect better with their teams as well. There's a lot of organizations where there's a lot of disconnect between leaders and teams, right?
Yep.
Leaders, they don't have time to talk to their people, and the people don't feel safe enough to be able to express how they truly feel. And so the people start to build up frustrations. The leaders also have frustrations, and we're still functional, but are we functioning optimally?
Yeah.
Are we truly maximizing on our connection and our ability together and our potential?
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, it's a no.
Yeah.
Right? Simply because I try to sell you my value and you try to sell me your value and we don't see each other's value. And so
not at all.
We just, you know, end up living in the frustrations. And so we come in, we do a culture quick scan and a business analysis, and we really truly look at the human side, right? So we look at the emotions, how are the people feeling, what are the underlying thought patterns, what are their belief systems that are blocking that connectivity between leadership and team.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at organizations like a human body. For a human body to be, you know, functional and operational, the mind needs to be right, the body needs to be right, and you need to be connected to your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly how we define organizations today. We look at an organization for what it is, a living, breathing organism. It's always moving. There are people that are working in there, right? But then the business itself, it has a business mind, which is the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
It has a business body, which is the structures and the processes. And it has a business soul, which is every single heartbeat that's connected within that organization. There needs to be alignment between all three for you to truly have an energetic and engaging working environment. And so when that's not the case, or if the organization wants to work proactively, they can hire us. And we do a culture quick scan. And then from there, we create a strategy that actually works. So we create a success playbook for the leaders that actually works, because they're going to understand what are the emotional needs that they need to meet so that they can start to bridge that gap instead of just hear more benefits.
Yeah,
and the people are still not happy. But I did this. They're still not happy. But I'm doing this. Still not happy.
So I'm going to slow you down a moment and bring you back to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it's amazing what you guys are doing and how you're helping companies strive and connect with their energy, connect back with their teams. But how would you say that personally, and based on all that you're telling, I think I know the answer to the question already, but still going to ask it. So how would you say that at this moment, how do you feel connected to your purpose? So your life's purpose and your current career?
Yeah. Great question. For me, there's not one particular thing. So there's no one particular purpose. What I can tell you is that I understand my ultimate why. through inner work that I've done, which is to really help whomever, people, make better choices.
Okay.
Make better choices.
So not necessarily just the leaderships and
no,
and
it's not necessarily just in leadership. We help people to become, you know, the leader of their energy. That can be, yes, we do work with corporations and high-level leaders. That's also the space that I came from, so that's the easiest. But we also do, you know, we work with other types of entrepreneurs as well who maybe are not fully there yet. We work with them in a different way. And so it can be anybody. It can really be anybody. So my ultimate why is to help people make better choices and bring harmony back to the world.
Okay.
Right? And I see it like this, that if you look at what owns the world in a way, a lot of times it's corporations. There's a lot of influence there. And people spend most of their time
at work. Yeah.
And so for me, as a business owner and an entrepreneur, I've worked in enough shitty working environments. I feel like every owner has the responsibility to create the best environment for their people, because you are, regardless of what you give them as a salary, they are giving you something that they can never get back. Money best comes time. And goes, but their time is priceless.
Yep.
So if you're going to ask them to be with you longer than they are with their families, you damn sure make sure that you create an incredible environment for them to be able to thrive.
Yeah.
And so how am I connected to my purpose is I do a lot of inner work. I meditate. I do technically the things that you don't talk about in corporate life. But I make sure that I keep aligning to my energizers.
Okay.
Right? To make sure that I stay connected with who I am. So I also ask the difficult questions. I tend to use when I get triggered as a way to discover myself deeper. And honestly, I date myself. So I'm married, but I love dating myself.
So what a unpack that for us. That
means I'm very interested in myself and why I do the things that I do. I want to learn what is my blueprint? Why do I behave like this, good and bad?
Yeah.
Right? Because I want to know all about me and why I am the way that I am. So in a way, I don't know how people would look at this, but I'm obsessed with why I do the things that I do. And I'm also obsessed with why other people do the thing that they do.
Yeah. So right? So that curiosity that you have, you, to some degree, let's say, self-experiment to constantly discover. Yeah. But then that helps you also to do it better for others when exactly. It's time to dive deeper.
Yeah.
Because you've probably hit certain roadblocks at different times and
don't
know exactly how to penetrate those walls. But then because you're so curious and want to unpack all of that for yourself, you continue down that path and learn how to unlock things, which then helps.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's go back now. All the way back to when you were younger than your son.
Okay, yes.
So you were born in Aruba?
I was born in Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam. Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Okay, but you're currently living in Aruba. You were born in Amsterdam.
Yes.
And where are your parents from?
My dad is from Curacao. Mm-hmm. My mom's from Aruba.
Okay.
Yeah. So I very much have, you know, predominantly Caribbean roots.
Yeah.
Me and my dad, we did a DNA test. And I have about 12.5%, you know, like Injang, as we say it in Papiamento, which
what
is that? Indian.
Okay. Like real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, very much Caribbean roots. And I grew up from the age of 5 until 18 in Aruba. So my entire family from my mom's side is in Aruba. I have a lot of them that, you know, either live in Holland or the U.S. or different places in the world. And then from my dad's side is really from Curacao.
Okay. So what was life like growing up in Aruba?
What was life like growing up in Aruba? I mean, it was great. Were there certain things, you know, that impacted my blueprint? Yes. And I think that you would have to ask my parents better, but I would have defined myself as a child as the one who's very smart, intuitive, and very sensitive.
Okay.
And so, you know, it can be a dangerous combination for a kid because during the between three and five, you know, I came and went. So, you know, my parents tried during that time, you know, stay together, separate. And so I came and went in between those 2 years. Okay. Talking about
when you mean came and went
from Amsterdam to, because my dad has his, you know, like business in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my mom and her mom and our family lives in Aruba. So when they first separated, my mom went with me back to Aruba. Mm-hmm. And then I think they tried again and then we came back and then ultimately it didn't work. And then we went back to Aruba when I was five. So talking about, you know, my own deepest trauma is abandonment. Mm-hmm. Because that separation was very tough for me, but I didn't know at the time.
Yep.
Now, what was very difficult for me in Aruba is I, you know, being a very smart child and going to school here in Holland, mm-hmm. I was a lot more advanced than the kids, schools. Exactly. Yeah. And so when I went back, for me, that's literally how it felt, like I'm going backwards. Mm. And it was very tough for a lot of years for me.
Yeah.
I experienced bullying as well in school. You know, I was I born in Amsterdam, but then I'm also from the Caribbean. But then everybody saw me as the Dutch kid.
Yeah. I had a similar experience.
And then here they see me as, you know, the Caribbean like student. So never really, you know, yeah, exactly. So back then I didn't always feel at home. It took me a while before I could tell you like, hey, I'm from Aruba. Mm. You know, that's where my heart is.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, you know, single mom with me. And so, yeah, that's kind of like the upbringing that I had. A lot of family.
So
big
you have
family.
No siblings?
I have no siblings from both sides.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of cousins.
Okay.
So only from my mom's side, we're 21. So I never really felt like I missed
that. What, 21
cousins? 21 cousins. Oh, yeah. Damn. Only from my mom's side, which is incredible. And so I had a great, you know, like childhood, but through the different experiences that I had, for example, the separation of my parents and kind of going backwards at school. Mm-hmm. And so there are different things that happened that did impact my blueprint that it took me a very long time to discover that they're impacting me in my life today.
Yeah.
So all in all, it was a great childhood, but there were some things that impacted me, yes.
So could you give me one example of one of those things that impacted you that you went on this self-discovery journey and had to burst through that wall?
Yeah.
And what that was like?
Well,
if I'm going too personal, let me
no,
know.
No. I love it because it gives us, you know, the opportunity to share with people so that they understand how important, especially parents, how important imprinting really is. Mm-hmm. Imprinting is, you know, for a child between 0 and 7, mm-hmm. they're a sponge.
Yeah.
Everything that they experience becomes part of their character.
Yeah.
Right? And so, for example, in my case, separation of my parents, one of the things that became so deeply ingrained was the fear of abandonment. Mm. And now, being married to my incredible husband, he has a lot of patience. for me to be able to break through that but in the beginning,
how long you guys been married?
We've been married 6 years.
Okay.
Yes. And one of the things, for example, that impacted me that I had no idea was I'm very much, you know, an ambitious woman. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always looking and striving and want to grow. And my husband also, but compared to me, there's a difference. Mm-hmm. And my husband maybe had a little bit more balance where he could come home from work at that time and watch Netflix.
Yeah.
And that would become World War III. How dare you watch Netflix when we are not where we're supposed to be yet? How is it even possible? Not understanding where is that coming from, right?
Yeah.
And so we had a lot of fights. But then at one point, I needed to ask myself, Ming, why in the world
does this
bother you so severely? Going inwards, and again, that's the cue, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you can either keep looking at it one way, or you can discover, why in the world do you keep acting like that? Because I'm starting a fight.
Or you keep ignoring.
Or you keep ignoring, but then we're going to keep fighting.
Or not acknowledging that this is actually a thing that you need to deal with.
Exactly. And that's a very good point, because I needed to accept that I was the problem.
Yeah.
Not him watching Netflix, because it's not like he's a bum and he just watches Netflix, you know, all day long, 7 days a week. He comes from work and he turns on the TV.
Yeah.
And so once I accepted, like, okay, you keep fighting with this man and we're not going anywhere and you have a problem, so we got to figure this thing out. Mm-hmm. Once I went inwards and did the inner work and starting, you know, very simple, why do I behave like this?
Yeah.
Where is it coming from? What fear do I have? Why do I feel like I have to push him all the time, mind you, in a direction that I want him to go in? So asking these questions to myself and also being very honest with myself, letting my answers be extremely honest so I can discover what's really going on, I realized it's because I felt that if I grow and he doesn't grow the way that I think he needs to grow,
there'll be disconnect.
There will be disconnect, and there might be a separation. And that is one of the deepest fears that I have. So unconsciously, that first separation between my parents happened when I was 3. Imagine that there's, and this is called the IFS theory, which is the internal family systems theory that's used a lot in trauma work. That the moment that that snapshot gets created, and if that snapshot is severe enough, imagine a little superhero that's born. So that first time that my parents separated, a little 3-year-old was born. And every time that I have any trigger of any type of separation, for example, you watch Netflix and I'm here reading a book to grow my mind, AKA possible separation, that 3-year-old fights to the death. So that doesn't happen. And in what way? I'm going to fight with you.
Yeah.
Why do you always have to watch TV? Why can't you read a book? Why aren't you doing this? Don't you see that we're not where we need to be? All of the things that have to come out, come out.
Yeah.
But what's really happening is that little superhero, that 3-year-old inside of me, that subconscious pattern that I have is driving my behavior so hard because I'm simply afraid that I'm going to lose him.
Yeah.
So that's one example.
That's a very deep example. Thank you for unpacking that. I can actually recognize some things in that as well.
Okay. Because
my parents also separated when I was 4. And that little superhero has showed up at different times, and there were different moments throughout even my marriage. Well, without me, let's say, knowing these specific methods, I've done my own version of the work and given those things a place. But it's interesting.
Now I gave you
the human mind.
And now I gave you an example of something in your personal life, right? Yeah. But it works the exact same way in the business setting.
In the business, yeah.
Right? One of the ways that this same particular, let's call it trauma, impacted me in the beginning of my business is I would either work with someone and then it wasn't working anymore, but instead of having that conversation, I would prolong this relationship that's not working.
Yeah.
Simply because I don't want to lose the person and the thoughts that come to be able to get me to stay in that, because that feels safer than letting go but you know, we're in a very small market. Who's gonna do it better if this person is still here? Or I mean, if they're not here anymore, then what am I gonna do? How am I gonna be able? So my mind creates the stories to be able to link with the whatever fear that I have in that moment and make it, you know, this is the way that we have to stay.
Yeah.
And so that's also one way that this particular thing can show up in your business, for example.
In the professional space. All right. So switching gears again. how would you say your Caribbean roots have influenced your way of doing business?
I've never been asked that question before, so thank you for that. I think one of the best things about, you know, having roots in the Caribbean is that although it was in a way some sort of trauma that I needed to regress because of school, for example, mm-hmm. you are very much connected a lot of times to what matters. Mm. And family, things are not always as advanced. Mm-hmm. Things move a little bit slower, right? So sort of like that other side of the coin. And I don't, you know, I've never been asked this question before, but I can imagine that those are very engraved things in me that it helps me to be more present mm. from time to time versus always getting lost in running and doing and this and that. And sometimes I also still struggle, but... Mm-hmm. It's those ingrained things, you know, like having a get-together with your family, for example. Just on a Sunday, very easy. I think it's those things that help me to come back to presence.
Come back to.
Faster.
Yeah.
Than maybe if I didn't have.
If you didn't have that foundation.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if I didn't grow up in that collective energy. So these are the good things of growing up. You know, on the island, you're much more connected to nature. You're mm-hmm. much more connected to slowing down and what matters and family.
Yeah.
We tend to disregard family so often, right? And I also had that. Like, oh my God, I don't want to deal with these types of things. Blah, blah, blah. But the older you get, and for example, one of those things that I experienced was, you know, having been touched by breast cancer, that's when you realize what truly, truly matters.
Yeah.
And so once I went back to the Caribbean after, you know, my studies and the business here in Amsterdam is when I started to uncover what family really is and how important that really is. And so those things that you experience there, even growing up where you have the sun every single day.
Oh, yeah.
People don't understand how important the sun, and then when the moon comes, we are much more outside in the Caribbean than we are, you know, anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so I think those things became part of my foundation that helped me out a lot today in how I do business and how I operate in my life.
Awesome. And as you said it, I could also recognize a lot of that in the different spaces that I've been when... oftentimes here in the Netherlands, people would, I'll just say it in Dutch, but waarom ben je altijd zo relaxed? I can easily stress as well, and I do have stress, and I stress about enough things. But at the same time, I do recognize what you're saying, that those foundational aspects makes it that I can quicker switch and then just get back to the present and the now and also just let go.
Yes.
And have faith that, you know, things will work out. They're not just going to magically work out. You got to do the work to make them work out. But at the same time, me being completely stressed out and having anxiety over it is not going to make it any better. Right. It's definitely going to make it worse. All right. So Let's come back to, let's say, in the earlier parts of your career, because we haven't really unpacked any of the time spent in the hotel corporate environment. We don't have to dive in too deep into that. But did you have any mentors along your journey, and how did they impact your life and career trajectory?
Yeah. Now, well, let's start with what happened to me when I entered corporate life like that. I took a different route. So after finishing my master's here, I couldn't find a job, you know.
When was that?
I finished in 2014.
Okay.
And I was applying here in Holland, and I was applying in Aruba. Now, in all honesty, I don't think I truly understood how to sell my skills either, but then also, you know, doing WAO and university and you don't really have any type of real life experience except for the books.
Yep.
And so it was tough for
theory,
8 months.
Theory,
it was pure theory. And so at one point, I got the opportunity to be able to start Bed and Breakfast together with my dad in the center of Amsterdam. And we started, you know, with a house that he had at the time. And I don't want to say Airbnb was new, but Airbnb wasn't as it is today.
Yeah. I mean, it was fairly new.
Yeah. So we put up, you know, the rooms on Airbnb, not really knowing exactly what we're doing. And it's so interesting because we had a booking before the rooms were done that I needed to cancel. And I did that for about 2 years, mm-hmm. right? And people would think that I was crazy because I had, I guess, the freedom of an entrepreneur and you can just do your work at a coffee place. Mm-hmm. But I felt that for whatever that comes next, mm-hmm. and this is the part of the importance of being connected to yourself, mm-hmm. I felt that I needed to do something different and I needed mm-hmm. to work for a company that wasn't mine or family owned.
Yeah.
I didn't think that I was gonna get the job, but I applied for a director of sales position in Bonaire. Mm-hmm. Those crazy people hired me. And at 26 years old, I was suddenly responsible for a multi-million dollar budget. Right, of an opening property. I didn't study hospitality. Mm. I'd never seen a multi-million dollar budget in my life. And so the first year I failed miserably, like really, really miserably. And that was also the year, it's either that year or the year after where, because I was working for Marriott, mm-hmm. where Marriott merged with Starwood. Mm. And so whomever needed to guide me in that moment ended up having 52 hotels under them. So, Pini Mini Bonaire doesn't matter as much anymore. It's not personal, but that's really what happened.
Yeah. It's just business.
It's just business, yes. So if you were to ask me, you know, who were really, really like my mentors during, you know, that time, mm-hmm. There was a particular lady who isn't with us anymore. She really tried to guide me in the best way. I got, you know, a couple of calls where she was yelling at me, but she gave me the opportunity to truly learn the sort of like the business side and how you need to do things. So she kind of took me under her wing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't always fun, but it was definitely necessary. And honestly, during that timing as well, I would say it would be my parents. Okay. So my mom is an incredible, you know, sales manager. Everything sales-wise, because I was a director of sales, mm-hmm. the talents that I have for sales till this day come from the basic foundation that I've learned from her. Mm. And my dad is an incredible strategist. And so
you put those two together.
I put those two together. And I also have to say, because I'm so interested in myself, mm-hmm. I tend to get my answers in books. Mm-hmm. So during that particular time, I was going through a crazy period in my first, you know, director position. And I found yoga. So there were also yogic teachers that were there at that time for me that really helped me. So it wasn't just one particular area. Yeah. It was always these different, you know, specialties. Now,
as an energetic human being.
Exactly. As a holistic.
In all of these.
As a holistic perspective. Oprah, for example, whom I've never met, but I was looking at some video from hers. She guided me to a book that, you know, changed the course of my life. And that book is The Seed of the Soul by Gary Zukav. Mm-hmm. And so like that, I had different mentors at that time.
So whether they were physically in your life or through the books or
exactly.
the videos. Yeah.
So those were the predominant ones. If I look at that timing, that, you know, beginning of corporate life in a way, I would say it would be really, really those.
And if we come closer to the here and now, are there any persons in let's say the last 5 years that have played a role, a mentorship role for you?
Yes, definitely. I have a few friends.
Okay.
Let me start with this. I am in a incredible, like we're like four entrepreneurial women group. Mm-hmm. Going back to trauma, mm-hmm. I had another trauma where, for whatever reason, it wasn't safe to work with you know, powerful women. Something very stupid happened, but for whatever reason, it was very impactful for my body at the time.
Yeah.
And doing inner work as well, I managed to learn how to build relationships with very, you know, like powerful women in a way. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that my dad has also really, really taught me is how powerful you are as a woman, you know, mm-hmm. looking at it from an energetic perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in an incredible friendship with three other women. And this is very, very important for me right now. So we are friends, but in a way they kind of mentor me in certain areas as well. Because we have a friendship where we intentionally are very honest with each other, right? And we keep each other accountable.
So, I've met at least one of them, right?
I don't think you've met this tight group.
Okay, that group.
You haven't met one yet, but let me tell you, they are definitely ones that you want to meet because we keep each other accountable on all areas, right? So if something happened and I'm coming back and I'm, let's say, you know, complaining about it, they would literally stop me and be like, stop, you are the problem. And so that has been extremely helpful for me because I always have my accountability group with me anywhere that I go at any time of day. They would drop anything to be there with me, right? So I have that I still consider some sort of mentorship because they're all in different places in their own career and business life. And me as well. And so it's sort of like this connection on different levels that I have with them. Lately, one of my mentors who I don't even know if he knows that he's one of my mentors, but is Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Okay.
Especially throughout my, you know, medical journey with the breast cancer, I've been able to create a reality that doctors in two different places in the world with more than 50 years of experience didn't think that was possible for me. And through his work, through his meditations, I managed to create a completely different reality for myself.
Yeah.
And so that's also been, you know, one of my mentors right now. I always have
because we had this conversation offline. But in essence, you said that through that work, in a very short space of time, you were able to reverse.
Not reverse. What I was able to do is, so for, you know, our audience to get a little bit more context, is 2 years ago, I came for one of my dreams, actually, where I joined a TEDx women competition in Amsterdam. And something to know about me is I try to be as natural as I can, you know? So I do wear a little bit of makeup, but I'm not one to use deodorants, and I try to eat as well as I can. And so that's always been part of my path, making better choices, right? Yeah. And long story short, but after that competition, I needed to spray a deodorant. The next day, I had burning sensation in one of my breasts. And that didn't go away. And in September, you know, at one point, I ended up going to the doctor and went very, very fast, but then needed to do the sonogram and all of that kind of stuff. And I found out that there is something and you need to do a mastectomy. But that went very, very fast. And every result that I would get from the biopsy and the blood and the blood, every single one was the worst that it could be from that, you know, test.
Yeah.
And the doctors in Aruba, for example, told me they do their best, but the reality that they created for me was you are very young. Mm-hmm. It's probably very aggressive. And so if you don't go through all types of treatments, then your success rate, your survival rate is not going to look well for you, right? Doctors in Colombia also really thought after 30 years and they, you know, they've seen everything. They were a little bit less grim, but for them also, you will probably need some type of treatment after the operation. And there was no other alternative than to do the operation because it overtook my breast. And so very, very fast, you know, I needed to go and do a mastectomy. So from the moment that I found out to when I needed to do the operation, which was October 31st on Halloween 2023, in that time frame, I changed everything. So I changed my diet, I started meditating, I started following Dr. Joe's work, and I started to focus on a different reality, right? okay, I need to do the operation. So I had accepted that at that point. But no, I don't want any other treatment. Mm. I don't want the chemo, the radiation. I'm going to live until I'm 102. So I'm not going to go through any of that kind of stuff. So I started focusing in my meditations every single day. Every single day.
For how long were you meditating?
Maybe 3 weeks.
Okay.
Literally three weeks.
And then the meditation.
The longevity of it. 45 minutes to an hour every day. Because I was losing my mind, literally. Yeah. But I would meditate every, like I would wake up in the morning, I would put my headphones on, I would do a guided, you know, Dr. Joe meditation, where I would focus on how I don't want to feel anymore and how I do want to feel. And I started envisioning that the lump, I guess, that it would started to dissolve and it's not, you know, spreading and it's not going anywhere and it's getting smaller and it's getting smaller. And how I do want to feel, you know, I want it, and I still do, I want another child, and my business is growing, and I could see myself old dancing with my great-grandchildren. So that was the reality that I was focusing on. Not the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren.
So that's
the reality that, you know, I was focusing on every single day. So whatever reality that the doctors were giving me is not my reality. Going, doing the operation, needing to heal. 10 days later, you get the pathology. And the doctor tells me, are you sitting down? And I'm like, okay, I can sit down. And he's like, you couldn't have asked for a better result. And I'm telling you, and I become emotional.
Yeah.
Because in that moment, I got my miracle. It was 5.5 centimeters.
Originally.
The cancer block. A cancer block of 5.5 centimeters.
You have to put that in context.
To keep it localized, imagine something that's 5 centimeters or 5.5 centimeters big. Cancer block was.
Yeah.
I managed to keep it localized. It didn't go anywhere. It didn't start spreading. And so I needed the operation, apparently. But then afterwards, I created my reality. I didn't need any chemo, any radiation. I guess case needed to go to the board there in Colombia for them to be absolutely sure that I didn't need anything.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Wow.
And so by changing my self-talk in those meditations every single day, I changed what was possible for me because I simply...
And that was a three-week period.
That was a three-week period. And one of those things that I learned in the Dr. Joe books is I started reading the book, You Are the Placebo, which for me is like his, you know, medical book. Mm-hmm. And there's a particular sentence where it says, you might be going through the experience, but whatever you do, do not accept the illness as your own. Whatever you put behind I am will become of you.
Yeah.
That's why you won't ever hear me say my breast cancer. I say the breast cancer journey. The cancer block, not my cancer block, because I didn't invite that energy into my being and into my reality. I did go through the experience, but it was never mine. It was never my cancer block. And honestly, I think that that's one of those things that helped me to create a different reality for myself. Whatever you say, and it's difficult sometimes to do when you go through, especially like a medical crisis, because the fear consumes you.
Yeah.
My son was 4 at the time.
Yeah, wow.
Right? And to have to deal with, what if it did spread? And, you know, what if I'm not going to be here anymore? What am I going to do? He's 4.
Yeah.
He sleeps next to me every single night till this day.
Yeah.
So to have to deal with those types of questions is very tough.
Yeah.
But I honestly believe with everything that I have and not accepting that as part of my being, so I am, you know, I'm in the roller coaster and I'm going through the experience, but it is not mine.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things that I learned, I guess, from, you know, this mentor. And the other thing that I learned is that a medical crisis, or any type of crisis for that matter, is definitely your soul trying to wake you up from the reruns of the ego. And that's very, very powerful, because a lot of people tend to go through a midlife crisis, right? What is a midlife crisis really? That is when you've created a life based on your identity, and your soul is tired of the identity.
Of this false identity.
Exactly. It's tired of the identity. And so suddenly,
connect to your soul's purpose.
Exactly. Suddenly you want to do things. And if you really look at what people tend to do in midlife crises, they want to buy a sports car. They want to, you know, go on a world tour. They want to do the things that make them feel alive.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been living. They've been existing for the longest time. Now, I'm very blessed to have gone through, you know, this type of crisis so young at 33.
Yeah.
And learn these lessons so that the rest of my life, up until I'm, you know, 102 or more, I live.
Yeah.
And versus don't just exist. Yeah.
Deep stuff. So, 33. So, you're 35 now?
I'm 35 now, 35 yes. Now.
So, if we go back 17 years.
17 years.
Yeah. So, we go back to 18
fresh
year 18 old.
Year old.
Fresh 18 year
didn't
old.
Know anything about life.
Yeah. Yeah. She definitely didn't know all of these turns and twists that were awaiting her. Being thrown into to so many extreme situations that she would have to come out and create the best possible outcome and sit here today with such positive energy. What advice would you give that 18-year-old?
Explore as much as you can. Be mindful, but explore. Allow yourself to explore and be uncomfortable. Get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Try different things. Because if you don't try, if you don't explore, you're going to create a life that is not yours. You're going to create a life based on the identity.
You're going to just create an existence and not a life.
Exactly. At that time, not everybody. For example, my husband, you know, he became a father at 18. So it's a little bit different because then you have that responsibility. But if you don't have any type of responsibility yet, for goodness sake, go and explore. Don't try to be so tied to, you know, the thing that makes you feel safe. For a lot of us that come from the Caribbean islands, once we are here, for example, we tend to stay in the same groups.
In the same circles.
Right? In the same circles where we can speak the same language. Go to China. Go to Istanbul. Go somewhere. Make friends with people that don't look like you, that don't speak your language. So
and
that
have
you
a
can.
Different perspective.
And have a different perspective. But then also explore different things. Go to an art class. Go, you know, like learn how to create a puzzle. Learn different things so that you can discover yourself better. The more you discover yourself, the more you learn what gives you energy and what doesn't. And from there,
the better you become in tune with those energy givers versus drainers.
Yeah. And try to align more and more and more with your energizers. Because then you're going to live predominantly and create predominantly in a beautiful state. And you're going to stay closer to who you are. Now, a lot of times when we come from the Caribbean as well, we also have, you know, these parental expectations sometimes that make it very difficult. I need to be very honest. I'm now as a parent, I'm trying to find the balance between this. But one of the things that drove me to be able to, you know, finish my studies was the fear of disappointing my parents, right? My dad didn't come from a lot. And my mom was a single mom, you know, struggling a lot of times. And they both, you know, that's why they're my mentors as well. They both managed to create a completely different reality from where they came from.
Yeah.
But that also blocked me on the other end. And it's my own choosing based on, you know, how I grew up. But I didn't really explore. I managed to get a degree because I didn't want to disappoint them, but I didn't manage to explore. I guess if I look back and giving advice to this 18-year-old is don't live to just make them happy or to get their approval. Do the inner work that you need to do to be able to shift these patterns so that you can explore and discover who you are to create a life that makes you happy in the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because your parents will always love you no matter what. They might not agree with the thing that you do. They might not even understand the thing that you're creating. Right? Yeah. In the beginning, for me, with the bed and breakfast, yeah. You know, it's like, okay, so when are you going to get a real job? When are you going to get a real job? This is not a real job. I can't fault.
Yeah.
Because that's all they know. Right? But the more that you explore and the more that you're willing, I guess, to, yeah, I don't want to say not make other people happy, but in a way it is that, mm-hmm. and make yourself happy, you're going to create a life that is based on who you are.
Yeah.
And not just what is expected of you. But there's balance in that, mm-hmm. right? And so that's the number one advice that I would give my 18-year-old.
Explore more.
And I would say this to the 18-year-old, but I don't know if the 18-year-old would fully, you know, comprehend, because sometimes in life, you got to go through things to learn, right? Yeah. But take care of your health. Mm-hmm. The only wealth you have is your health.
Yeah.
And so study yin and yang, because everything comes from that, right? Everything comes from yin and yang. Have fun and explore one end. Mm-hmm. Eat all the crap that you want, for example. But don't do it all the time. Make sure that you take care of your health. Right? You need that other side as well. Don't wait until you're 30 to go through some crisis to then learn how to do it. And in my case, it was a shock because I have been focusing on my health. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times you do things, for example, I was vegetarian for a very long time. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing, but I didn't know exactly what I was doing. And so I was extremely protein deficient. Mm. Does that mean you have to eat meat? No, but if you're going to do it, go and get some coaching. Explore it deeper. Get to know from different perspectives and then experiment for yourself what works and what doesn't work. I didn't do that. I just cut the meat and continued, you know, eating. And then to find out after the mastectomy, when I really dove deep into the root cause, how is it possible that a 33-year-old that's supposedly healthy, doesn't eat a lot of sugar and that kind of stuff, because a lot of people think that cancer has to do with sugar only.
Yeah.
How is it possible that I ended up with a 5.5 cancer block inside of my body? And so I dove deeper into, you know, different fields again to understand the root cause of how I could have possibly ended up there, because unfortunately Western medicine, you know, they take the breast off or you know, they do the operation and that's it.
Yeah.
And then you come for the checkups or you need to do the chemo or whatever, and then okay, good, you're cancer free.
Yeah.
How did I get here? I don't want to get here back in 5 years.
Exactly.
Right? So I managed to find the root cause, but through other alternatives. And what was really disappointing is when I went back, you know, at one of those trips to the oncologist, and I started explaining what I found out. As amazing as the doctor is and also believes in energy and has meditation music in the operating room. Didn't care.
Oh, wow.
Didn't flinch, didn't care, didn't ask, oh, really? How does that work? Okay. All right. Come back in 3 months.
Yeah.
So back to the 18-year-old. Explore to get to know yourself better. Take care of your health.
Take care of your health. Awesome. So are there any, let's say, final thoughts, closing words for not only the 18-year-olds, but everyone watching, viewing, listening?
Yeah. One thing that I want to share that I recently from, you know, one of the Dr. Joe Dispenza retreats that I went, because
you met him in person as well?
Well, no, okay. But I went to his retreat, so I didn't get to talk to him because he has, you know, imagine he helps a lot of people self-heal. So imagine you have 2,000 people that want to talk to you. He needs a couple of bodyguards even at these retreats at this point. And they also tell you, remember, do not touch him because he's walking in the crowds, right? Okay. So he starts to become, I guess, this hero in a lot of people, their eyes of, you know, you helped me to create a different reality. But one of the things that I learned is that what we can perceive due to the speed of light is only 0.00001%. That includes us.
0.00. How many zeros? Three zeros?
I guess three. Okay. Three or four.
Okay.
Very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
There's still 99.9999% undiscovered.
Mm.
If we can only perceive, you're sitting here and I'm sitting here, we can only perceive 0.0001%. How much more of yourself have you not discovered yet?
Mm-hmm.
How much more would you be able to create? How much more would you be able to feel? How much more would you be able to love? There's so much undiscovered potential that each and every single one of us has.
Yeah.
You just need to dare and be interested in yourself enough to start to discover. However you're feeling right now, maybe you feel depressed, maybe you feel like you're lost, maybe, you know, you feel stuck. That's only 0.0001%. There's so much more that you can discover in the energy field, right? We're talking about quantum physics. In the energy field, you are energy. If you feel stuck, it's energy is stuck. You move your body. That's basically what's going to help you.
Yeah.
Be so obsessed with yourself, because they tell you don't be so obsessed with yourself. Be obsessed. I'm giving you permission. Be obsessed with yourself so that you can truly get to know yourself. Understand that those hard moments in your life are the cue of your soul for you to start to walk in your power. Yep. Instead of resisting it, embrace
it.
Your deepest fears, because that's when you set yourself free. That's when you become the leader of your energy, whether it's in your career or in your personal life or everywhere in between. That's how you start to truly, truly live in purpose. For you first.
Awesome. Well, Ming Lee, thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been an amazing conversation. I knew that this was going to be quite a journey, but I've even learned some stuff here today. So thanks a lot for coming through. I know the schedule is busy and you got some other things to do today and enjoying your time in the Netherlands before you head back to Aruba. So where can people find you? Social media handles, websites?
Yes. So where can you find me? Definitely in social media. You just look up, you know, Ming Lee Chung on Instagram or keyconnect.co on Instagram. You'll also find me on Ming Lee Chung on LinkedIn and our website, keyleader.com right now. And right now I'm working with amazing designers from Aruba that are helping me put an entire other website in place, which is going to come very, very soon, that I'm excited to share with you.
Awesome. And we'll be making sure to have all the links down in the description below. And thank you guys for tuning in. It's been an amazing ride. So if you haven't done it as yet, then I don't know what you're waiting for. But please subscribe, like, comment. Let us know any questions that we maybe should have asked or what were some of the most interesting parts of the interview. Just give us some feedback. We love to hear it and we respond to all of the comments. So once again, thank you for tuning in. And this is it. We're out. Bless.